Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport 2, myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, The Boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing and your MMA, then this is the show for you, Fight Night Extra, with myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis, where we discuss all the latest from the world of combat sports. Today, we're going to talk a bit of YouTube boxing. TalkSport brought you live commentary of KSI versus FaZe Temper from a sold-out Wembley Arena. Where does crossover boxing, though, sit in the current boxing landscape? So many fans seem to be annoyed by its presence, but why? Huge fight this weekend between Chris Eubank Jr. and Liam Smith. We're going to hear from both men and look ahead to the fight, and also a stacked undercard, too, featuring the likes of Joseph Parker, Richard Riakpor, and Fraser Clark. Anthony Joshua looks to have found his new trainer. Derek James looks set to be his third coach in just 16 months. We'll discuss the impact he could have on the former world champion, who his next opponent is also likely to be mentioned and named in a couple of weeks as well. And we're going to chat a bit of UFC, too. Jon Jones will finally make his debut at heavyweight, but not against Francis Ngannou after the champion was released from his contract. Look, busy show as always. Don't go anywhere. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
Percent is what I would need. Whether I come in at that or not is, you know, you have to wait and see. But I know my ability, and I think that I'm going to handle this man with great ease.
I think Francis is in a place right now where he doesn't want to take a lot of risk. Feels like he's in a good position. We're going to release him from his contract. We're going to give up our right to match, and he can go wherever he wants and do whatever he wants.
Gareth A. Davis, you were at Misfits. You were there, over Arena, Wembley. I saw you out and about interviewing everyone from the world of celebrities. Louis Theroux, Holly Willoughby was there as well. I saw Katie Price there. I was walking, you know, around ringside, and I was like, this is what boxing should be. It should be like an open market, if you like, for everyone to want to come and watch the wonderful sport that we love. I enjoyed it. Look, I think me and you can separate quote-unquote real boxing from crossover boxing. I think some can't. But overall, what did you make of the night in itself?
Well, it was entertaining. And, you know, we know we're not watching the true heart of boxing. It's a form of sports entertainment. Yeah. As celebrity YouTubers, that's what it is. It is what it is. We don't paint it as anything else. Obviously, you know, you're presenting on the DAZN platform. They've separated it. They're calling it Misfits for a reason. You know, you could see all week what it was. It was a little man at the weigh-in who double I did a double leg takedown of, is it B Dave, one of the guys there on the card.
I like the way you're getting the names as well.
I went to the press conference. Pappy looked very good. I mean, you know, he actually looks quite talented as a southpaw. I think he had a ton of amateur bouts. He's a Filipino, loves Manny Pacquiao and Nonito Donaire. His mum was there afterwards and all his family. But they were all trying to get in the ring. The security had to stop them. KSI is a huge celebrity. As you say, Louis Theroux was there. He's making a documentary. I've got to meet Louis several times now. He's fascinated by the boxing world and he's fascinated by KSI. Krishan Gurumurthy was there from the very well-renowned journalist and broadcaster from the Nightly News, from I think Channel 4 it is.
Yeah.
He was there with his kids. Holly Willoughby was there with her sons and her beau.
It's amazing.
But they were all there. Louis got involved at the start because his son was interested in KSI. So for anyone that says, you know, this is ridiculous, my generation's children are going to watch this and they're taking their parents along with them. The atmosphere was phenomenal. The average age was probably about 25 in the crowd. Yeah. It was packed at 7 o'clock and it was packed at 11 o'clock when KSI was on the walk-on stage. They're using an MMA-style walk-on stage now as well. Yeah, which has a lot of drama about it. Every day, the anthems were fantastic. The singing was amazing. The comportment of the people there was extraordinary. I got to meet some people I don't really know. RD, the DJ, little guy, very cool. what's his name? Jordan Banjo from the dance group was a very cool guy to chat with him. I went everywhere from Derek Chisora to who was it? Johnny Hedges to Johnny Fisher. Yeah. Loads of guys there. Michael Venom Page.
Yeah.
Baby Sly. AJ McKee was there. Like, these are really famous, like, Baby Sly and AJ McKee are MMA royalty, you know? MVP. Exactly. Both their dads, extraordinary figures from the sport. Kimbo Slice. Who really, actually, when you focus in on it, if these guys weren't, these misfits, these YouTubers, weren't doing it under proper auspices on a broadcast, would be doing what Kimbo was doing around the back of McDonald's in Florida, in Miami, Florida, challenging other people to street fights. So you've got a combination of all these things. I have no objection to it. You put out a brilliant tweet today saying, what is it? And you suddenly got about 300 answers, didn't you?
Yeah.
And the views were very balanced in there, I thought, Addy.
I thought so. Look, you're going to get some that are still very against it.
Yeah.
And I think reading their tweets, they're almost against it because they feel like it's taken something away from the sport of boxing, which it isn't, as far as I'm concerned. I think one tweet was very, sort of fair. And it was like, I don't really like it, but what I don't want it to do is take away from the money that DAZN would have put into boxing, as in maybe the figures they give Eddie Hearn. I don't want that to take away from that. And I was like, it's not doing that.
No.
What it's doing is putting eyeballs on the sport. I love, and look, we go to so many boxing events. I love nothing more than to see a packed arena. I don't want to go to boxing events where until 10 o'clock it's empty. I hate that. And it's difficult for me as a broadcaster to get up for those events.
You feel like you're in the netherworld, don't you? You feel like you're in a world that is only surviving because of a couple of names. I so agree with you. And look, to the point where they step in the ring, it feels like professional boxing. When they step in the ring, it's very different. But you have to applaud an audience coming to the sport. You have to. I'd rather them do this, as I said on Saturday night on the broadcast, I would rather these young and becoming mainstream stars from the internet world, I'd rather them come and join our sport and influence all those young people watching them than I would them go into darts or Formula One or whatever other sport it is, you know?
There you go. And let's be blunt about this as well. It gives us work. We want to work. It gives us work as well. A lot of the journos, a lot of the boxing people as well, it gives us extra work. We go out there. They've opened doors for some people in terms of getting employment. But ultimately, boxing, I think, is the toughest sport in the world. They're giving it a real go. A lot of these guys are in great shape. Look at KSI. Fantastic shape.
Yeah.
I mean, look at him. And it was interesting as well to speak to Idris Virgo, who fought for the first time opened the show, sorry. And this is a guy that's fought in front of a couple of hundred people, behind closed doors, not getting paid much. He walked out to 13,000 people and couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you doing it again? He's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
So look, I think it's fantastic. They've got so many events planned all over the world, not just in the UK. Obviously, they've been doing stuff in the US. And long may it continue as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine with it. And you've got to go there to feel it, first of all. Feel the atmosphere. Kimbo Slice, Baby Slice is going to get involved as well. He told me on Saturday night.
Wow.
He's lining up for a fight. Obviously, he's an MMA guy, but he's coming into boxing. The key is that they get the matchmaking right, in my view. That's key as well. And look, it may only have a limited shelf life. It may not go on forever. But it wouldn't surprise me to see KSI, JJ, against Jake Paul, rather. He's fought Logan Paul. I was there 4 years ago when Devin Haney and Billy Joe Saunders were on that card. Ryan Garcia was in the crowd. Justin Bieber, Lil Wayne, all these guys at the Staples Center. Eddie Hearn was promoting it. It was on DAZN then. You know, I was out for a week working with William Hill on it. It was a fascinating week. And since then, I just thought, yeah, there's an elision of different forces going on here. It may not last forever, but it would not surprise me, Eddie, to see KSI against Jake Paul at Wembley Stadium this summer. I think
they could do it easy.
It's big. I know. Do you not think it could fill out Wembley? I do think it could. And so monetarily, in terms of a spectacle, in terms of an entertainment that involves our sport, I can see it happening.
Yeah, no, certainly it can. I guess the question, I guess that DAZN and Kelly Sowland and Mams Taylor, who are behind it, need to kind of answer, is what happens when KSI walks away? Is there still going to be a lot of legs in it? Is it just built up because of Jake Paul and KSI? Do we see enough emerging stars to continue its growth beyond KSI?
Well, I think when it started, a lot of the other, you know, was kind of 4 years ago it started. A lot of the other mainstream YouTube stars and DJs and all, you know, got all kinds of adult entertainment stars, OnlyFans, and OnlyFans stars
That is correct.
Yep. I mean, Elle Brooke won on Saturday night against a woman like 6 inches, 8 inches taller than her. And weirdly, the fact she's training with Ebony Bridges and Jimmy and Mark Tibbs, who are really the oldest school you could get in boxing. I mean, if you want to look at peculiar collaborations, weirdly, she's
crazy is that one?
It is, but she's probably out of all of them there on Saturday night got the best opportunity to cross over into real boxing if she gets any better, because there is a space for her to get involved in women's boxing if she gets a lot better, because she's there training day in, day out, sparring with Ebony Bridges. Look, it's a different space we were in on Saturday night. Very different to Manchester and Chris Eubank and Liam Smith that we're going to go on to in a minute and all those big names that are fighting. It's a different space. Let's see how long it lasts. I'm just really pleased that it's regulated in the right way. It will probably have its shelf life. But right now, as Louis Theroux told me on Saturday night, I'd never thought I'd be saying this on our show. As Louis Theroux told me on Saturday night, I'm spending loads of time around KSI JJ, and he's absolutely obsessed with boxing. He's addicted to it. And you can see it in him physically, you know?
Yeah, he loves it. He loves it. Got interviewed by Big Zoo on the night. And again, I just love walking around and seeing all the new faces that I thought would never be interested in boxing there watching people fight. And I think long may it continue. Real boxing, if you like, this weekend, Eubank versus Liam Smith. Everyone's going to make their way up to Manchester live on Boxer pay-per-view. For me, it's a 50-50 scrap. Really looking forward to this one. It's a fight we all thought wouldn't happen because obviously the Eubank-Ben situation. But I don't know. It's worked out now. It's worked out well for both. Eubank's stock's really high. Smith's stock's really high. And it really is a fantastic fight to kick off the boxing here in the UK this year.
Oh, absolutely. It's a brilliant event. I'm going to be honest about this. I don't think it's worthy of a pay-per-view event. It's not boxing proper. It's a phenomenally fascinating matchup, particularly because Chris Eubank Jr., I think, was going into a pretty much a gimme against Conor Benn, in my view. And yet he's got a real beefy battler against him on Saturday night in Manchester in Liam Smith.
Pause what you're going to say, because we are going to talk Eubanks Smith a bit later. We're going to chat about Anthony Joshua as well, new trainer, possible new opponent being announced as well for April. And we're obviously going to talk UFC. John Jones returning, Francis Ngannou leaving. All right, you're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Up next, we are going to be talking Eubank Jr. versus Liam Smith this weekend, and we're going to hear from both men as well.
Heading towards the final 30 seconds. Williams just put down on his backside there. Walked straight onto a straight left hand, I think, from Eubank, just as he was looking to throw his own left. And this first round has been turned on its head. Liam Williams was nicking it, and now he's going to lose it. 10-8. Eubank is stepping to him here, right towards the end of the round, and Williams is wrapping him up and looking to hold on.
50% is what I would need to beat Liam. Whether I come in at that or not is, you know, you might have to wait and see, but I know my ability, and I think that I'm going to handle this man with great ease.
I can't give you my honest reaction. It's because it's just, you know, I'm not the way to describe it, but I take it with a pinch of salt. I take a lot of what Chris says with a pinch of salt, really. You know, he's not stupid. He's a clever man.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis as well. Big fight this weekend. Really big fight. Chris Eubank Jr. versus Liam Smith. A fight that has been in the works for about a year and a half, a couple of years. Liam Smith fought in leaving DAZN and going to boxer that he was walking in to the Eubank fight. Eubank decided otherwise and wanted to fight Conor Benn. That didn't happen, and now Eubank is on the collision course with Liam Smith, and it really is a mouthwatering fight. It takes place in Manchester. It is on pay-per-view. We might discuss whether it should be on that or not. Before me and Gareth get into it, let's hear from Chris Eubank Jr. He spoke here about, you know, the Liam Smith fight, but also still wanting the Benn fight someday as well.
Of course, it is a fight that will always be of interest to me. Whether it's a year from now or 10 years from now, we will share the ring at some point. You know, he's lost all his privileges. There is no, there's not going to be any rehydration clauses and crazy weights I have to make. The ball is fully in my court now. He's lost all that after what he did. I'm in a strange position where, you know, my head, you know, as a businessman and as a fighter, my head says, you know, I want to fight him ASAP. You know, I want to give the fans what they want. I want a big payday. I want a high profile fight. And, you know, I want the entertainment, the excitement of that, and the legacy behind the name. So that's what my head says. My heart says he should be banned. You know, there should be an example made of him, so that we the kids coming up, understand what happens if you fail drugs tests, you know.
Chris Eubank Jr. there, confident, arrogant, as always, some may say, still harbors ambitions about that Conor Benn fight. But look, full eyes and everything needs to be focused on Saturday, because in front of him, I think if he gets the win on Saturday, it'll be his biggest win. So I think this is bigger than James DeGale and anything he's beaten other than James DeGale. I think this is his biggest win if he gets it on Saturday, Gareth.
Yeah, like you say, it's the, you know, you have to go back. I thought Matt Korobov, you could say, was a decent victory.
Yeah, and it ended early, didn't it, because of Korobov's injury.
Yeah, Arthur Abraham was a decent victory. He hasn't got massive names on his record. And it's, he had a Billy Jones Saunders early, which he lost, of course. They were both very young. But, you know, he's been chasing Golovkin. He's been chasing Canelo. He hasn't got those big fights. He lost to George Groves in a brilliant fight in Manchester, I hasten to add. I was there on the night working it live. But this is a huge fight for him. He could have fought Callum Smith at one point, of course, when they were both in the super middleweight division. And Liam kind of digs into him a little bit that you always avoided my brother. He's a very smart man. He's lived on the principle, and his father, Chris Eubank Sr., said all those years ago, it's a mug's game. You get in, you get as much you can, you get out. He's a very wealthy man from being very clever in his career. It's a fantastic matchup. As I say, I'm not sure whether it's a pay-per-view fight. Having said that,
Is it a pay-per-view card?
Yes, I think it probably is. But when you've got Richard Riakpo and Christoph Blavatsky, Joseph Parker against Jack Massey, who's dropping his scaffolding tubes to come and fight at not cruiserweight, but heavyweight against Parker. I think the fight of the night may well be Ako Esserman and Chris Kongo. That's a fantastic matchup between the unbeaten Esserman and Kongo, who I like both men. They're both brilliant welterweights. I think it's going to be a phenomenal fight. But, you know, it's one of those ones where a lot of people are picking Liam Smith because Chris Eubank's underestimating his technical boxing abilities. Now, Eubank is naturally the bigger. He's fought at middleweight and super middleweight. And the fact that Smith has done his best work at light middleweight, if you're fair to him.
Yeah.
You know, Eubank's the bigger, stronger fighter, but probably not technically as good as Liam Smith.
No,
so that could give Eubank problems. And I get people picking Smith to win this fight, but I think Eubank is good at going up the levels. He's always in phenomenal shape. He lives the life. And I've got the feeling he might just pip this on points on Saturday night in a fascinating fight where both men, as Chris told me, will have to kind of duck and bob and weave in close and go to the well in many ways in this contest. And Smith clearly doesn't like Eubank. I watched the gloves are off with Johnny Nelson, and there's a great energy and an electricity between the two men.
Yeah. Eubank has a way of winding up all of
his opponents.
We saw it with Ben. We've seen it with Liam Williams. He's fantastic. You're always going to lose those gloves are off, face off moments with him because he's so good with his words. Let's hear from Liam Smith. Liam Smith, potentially biggest win of his career as well, if he gets it. But he's thinking about what happens if he doesn't get it as well.
It'd be a long, long, long road back. A loss at 34 years of age. What I want to be in for, I want to be in the boxing for a fight like this or a challenge for a world title, and a loss puts you miles away from either. So, like I say, I'm not going to ruin my career, what I've had for 14, 15 years, by staying on too long and losing to people I shouldn't lose to.
Liam Smith there, again, as confident as Chris Eubank Jr. It's interesting that he says, look, if he loses, there's no way back for him. And I just wonder if that puts extra pressure on him. I wonder if it adds as a motivation. He said something similar in the lead up to his fight with Anthony Fowler, and he dug deep and got the job done there. I'm in the camp of sort of favouring Liam Smith in this one. I'm very much, what have you done for me lately? And I think Liam Smith's wins against Anthony Fowler and Vargas in America, I think they're better wins than Marcus Morrison and Liam Williams. I really do. But like you say, Eubank is the bigger of the two, possibly the fresher of the two as well. I think that's fair. He starts really fast, but then he seems to have a bit of a nosedive, as Eubank. And if Liam Smith can sort of be there in and around the halfway stage of the fight, I think he's got a chance to come on good. But again, it's the kind of fight we want. People are split on it, and that's what we want in boxing. Really good 50-50 matchups. You know, when you look at the undercard, Gareth, you mentioned Chris Kongo, Ako Esserman. Anything else sort of stand out for you? Ryakpor maybe going to world level against Slovakia?
Oh, yeah, this is a very big fight for Richard Ryakpor against the former world champion at Cruiserweight. Massive opportunity for him to make a statement as Lawrence Okolie, and I think, was it Maris Bradis did against Glavacki? Or certainly, he got stopped by a couple of guys. I think it's a key fight for him. He's looked very good in recent performances. I have a lot of faith in the big Adonis. I think it's a phenomenal story. With it being under Boxer and Sky Sports and Lawrence Okolie having been signed by them, Chris Billam-Smith coming off a phenomenal knockout. All three of those guys, obviously, Lawrence Okolie already the WBO champion, obviously splitting with Eddie Hearn, coming to Ben Shalom, Boxer and Sky. There's a great triumvirate there of guys that they can match. And obviously, I think Billam-Smith said he could never fight Okolie because they're too close in friendship terms. In the Shane McGuigan training stable, obviously Okolie's moved on, but they're too close to fight. They've done too many rounds together as friends and sparring partners. Massive opportunity for Ryakpor to make a statement, and maybe for Jack Massey. What a shock that would be if he could beat former WBO heavyweight champion Joseph Parker. I don't think he will, but as long as that fight's there, it's entertaining.
Yeah, I had Ben Shalom in the TalkSport studios a couple of weeks ago talking about that fight. And I was like, the risk reward for Joseph Parker here is just crazy. There's no reward. I mean, look, the reward's always a W, right? You get a W, you get paid, you get an outing, right? You fight. That's the reward, I guess. But no one's going to give him many plaudits for beating Jack Massey. The risk here is massive. You lose to Massey, and they're going to be saying that's that. They're going to be saying the Joe Joyce fight took too much out of you. For Massey, it's what an opportunity. I mean, what an opportunity to gate crash the world scene, move up from cruiserweight to heavyweight, take on someone that was a staple as a top 10 heavyweight, and potentially cause an upset. I think this is a really, really quick turnaround for Joseph Parker. He took a beating that night from Joe Joyce, and I'm surprised he's out so quick. They've tried to go a bit easy with Massey. That could be their undoing. For Massey, what an opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge opportunity for Jack One Smack Massey. You know, he's a fantastic guy. I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago on Saturday night on TalkSport. He's a great character. And like you say, this is one of those, he said, I couldn't say no to it. He said, I'm up against a former world champion, a guy that is spoken about because he's up there training with Tyson Fury and Morecambe. Mm-hmm. And he's literally like an adopted brother, isn't he, of Tyson Fury. He's in the mix. This is a guy that went 12 rounds against Anthony Joshua and looked very comfortable. He went 12 rounds with Andy Ruiz and looked comfortable. You've got to give him his plaudits for stepping up and taking this. I don't think he wins. I think Joseph is a very comfortable fighter in the office, in the square circle. And I think it's probably a 6-7-8 round job for Joseph Parker. I think he probably stops Jack in this fight. But I've got eyes on, like I say, Fraser Clark, I think, gets rid of Kevin Espindola quite simply. 7 wins, 6 losses. Fraser Clark moving on to 5 wins. Fraser really needs to up his game a little bit. But my eyes will be on what Eubank can do here. Because as we throw forward, Addy, Chris has already told me that he's going to fight Conor Benn this year. And it's going to be 160 pounds at middleweight. Eddie Hearn's pushing it out there. I contacted Mauricio Suleiman in La Ciudad de Mexico, in Mexico City, a few hours ago to ask him what's happening with this 270-page report submitted by Conor Benn's legal team over his 2 positive tests for clomiphene, particularly for the one in July with the WBC Cares program. Mauricio told me, hold your breath. No, he can't speak about it because it's under legal jurisdiction. I know that. I know. You nearly fell off your chair then, didn't you?
Honestly, for those listening, I kind of put my head forward into my mic, like, go on, are you going to tell me something that we don't know? And
But what I'll say is this, that is going to come to a resolution pretty soon. And if Conor Benn is exonerated and they do find a contaminated substance, that it's contaminated rather, the test, and he does get through that, expect Conor Benn to be back this summer against Chris Eubank Jr. That fight will happen as long as Ben's got a license. Because I tell you what, that's a bigger fight now than it was on October the 8th last year. Yeah, everyone would be crowding to watch it.
Yeah, look, both still want it. And if you're Eubank Jr., the best thing to have right now at this stage of your career is options, and he's got options, whether it's Conor Benn, Eubank Jr., Jamal Charlo, there's options out there for Eubank Jr. His stock right now is as high as it's ever been, I think, in his career. All right, still to come, look, we're going to chat the latest news from the UFC. Francis Ngannou has been released, and we have a huge fight coming to London this year as well, and the return of the great man, for me, the greatest MMA fighter of all time, John Jones. But up next, though, what impact could Anthony Joshua's new trainer have on the former world champion?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Champion. Welcome back. You're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis. Let's dive straight into this one, Gareth. I want to get your initial take on the news that Anthony Joshua could be fighting either Jermaine Franklin or Dempsey McKean. I want to start with Jermaine Franklin first. And UK viewers and listeners would know that's the guy that recently fought Dillian White. Controversial win, some may say, for Dillian White, but then Dillian White did get the W. What do you make of that one? AJ fighting someone that Dillian White just recently beaten. What do you make of that?
I think it makes more sense, Ali. He's 20, I think he's ranked 25 or 27 in the world, but he gave Dillian a tough night. I was there live reporting, writing on it on the night for the Telegraph. It was a very interesting fight. I had Dillian just pepping it in the last few rounds. Mm-hmm. He looked very lackluster and slothful that night without being rude about Dillian. Sure he wasn't. But Dillian, yeah, didn't. Yeah. He didn't look his best.
No, he wasn't. No.
Yeah. It was a sluggish performance. I mean, I'm not trying to critique him. I mean, he's sensitive.
It's true. What you're saying is fact. It was a bad performance from Dillian.
But I do think he eked out a victory. But Jermaine Franklin showed a lot of heart and a lot of spirit, a lot of courage in that fight. But I don't think he landed the heavier punches. I think it's a good opponent for Anthony Joshua. He's a right-handed fighter. He's an orthodox fighter rather than the southpaw, which Dempsey McKean is, the Australian, who's ranked 52 in the world. The soundings, the rumours on the street were that Joshua was going to fight McKean, first of all, the unbeaten southpaw Australian. But I'm glad that it switched closer to being Jermaine Franklin. That's the talk right now. It's not till about April the 1st, April, something like that, that they're going to have the fight. So there's time for that opponent to be changed again, but I think that's a good opponent for him. And I wrote a column on Sunday in the Sunday Telegraph saying that after 12 world title fights in a row since 2016, Anthony Joshua deserves a break. He deserves a gimme. He deserves a 4 or 5 round knockout. In this age of impatience, where everyone's got an opinion on social media, this is the way it used to work. If one of the big names had a loss, they would rebuild, and there's nothing wrong with him rebuilding. If they are looking at a July fight with Dillian White in a big stadium, take it to the O2, sell out the place. He's still got a big draw. Give him time, give him confidence. And that's what he needs, because we saw that shattered in many ways in that second Alexander Usyk fight last August.
Yeah. I'm so happy you said that. Obviously, look, you've covered the sport of boxing for over 2 decades, and you've seen a lot in terms of what goes on after a defeat and sort of the fights that are being made. And you can see it now where there is impatience from fight fans, where they just want to see you in immediately with like a top 5 fighter. I don't know if it's the UFC thing that's caused this, because obviously UFC, you don't get that gimme, do you? You're straight in there with killer after killer. But boxing's a completely different model. After a defeat, you are allowed, if you like, a gimme, as you say, a rebuild fight. And as much as I want to see AJ go in there with someone maybe a bit more riskier than Jermaine Franklin, I'm with you. I think AJ does deserve a bit of a blowout. And I think Jermaine Franklin would give him some rounds. I think we saw that he's got decent feet, decent hands. But ultimately, AJ should knock him out. And I don't mind that. If AJ is going to have 3 fights this year, and that's what they're saying, whether or not it's true or not, I don't know. But if he's going to have 3 fights, I don't mind one of those 3 being quote-unquote a gimme. And the other 2 being like, you know, top 10 difficult fights. I don't mind it. I think boxing fans now have come, I don't know what it is. It's almost now. Me growing up and watching fights in the 80s and the 90s, everyone had a gimme. It was just almost common practice. Now it seems as though fight fans don't accept that.
Well, Mike Tyson got Peter McNeely. Do you remember when he came out after the 2 Donovan Razor Ruddock fights? He obviously went to prison. He fought Peter McNeely. Obviously, Anthony Joshua hasn't been to prison. Look, Lennox Lewis came back and avenged defeat against the same guys he'd lost to twice, and that was remarkable. But I spoke to Bob Arum as well in the last few days, and when he had Ali, when Ali had lost to Joe Frazier at the Madison Square Garden in 1971, he had a few gimmies. I think he fought 10 times in 73 and 74, something like that. Or 72 and 74. Yeah, 6 times 1 year, 4 the next, 72 and 72, or 73 and 74. Recorded it with Bob the other day. It'll come out in a few days' time. And even the great Muhammad Ali had some easy fights, you know, just keeping him warm every couple of months. He thoroughly deserves it. There's an appetite of impatience around it all. Like you say, I think it may well be influenced by the UFC, but Big AJ needs his confidence back. He's gone seeking, as you say, a third trainer in 16 months. We'll talk about that in a minute, I'm sure. And I'd like to see him get back to what it feels like physically to dominate and knock someone out. And then it's a perfect lead into the Dillian White fight in the summer. Ditto, Dillian White needs a victory, I think. I hope he has another fight and another victory before they meet in July, because they'll try and put it on in a big stadium, I think.
Yeah, we might see it. I've said this as well, in terms of trying to sell the Dillian White fight, and I know DAZN like to spread their fighters over different cards. Why can't we see Dillian White versus Dempsey McKean on the undercard of AJ versus Jermaine Franklin? I don't know why we can't see it on the same night. I mean, Dillian White should be able to go again in April. I don't think he was injured after that recent fight. So it'll be interesting to see what both of them do. But hopefully we get an announcement about AJ and that opponent in the next sort of few weeks or so. I do think fans are not going to be happy. I'm just telling you what I can see on social media. You probably see it as well. But look, it is what it is. 12 world title fights back to back. I think someone mentally, and we saw it in Saudi Arabia, mentally, he needs a bit of a break, I think. And I think a Jermaine Franklin type is a good name, a solid top 20, top 25 opponent that will bring some sort of, I don't know, skill set to the ring, but I think AJ in the end will be good enough. I want to ask you about the trainer situation. Look, we're hearing it's going to be Derek James. AJ did go and visit that camp before he chose Robert Garcia. So I'd like to know why he chose Robert Garcia after visiting Derek James. But look, he goes to Derek James potentially. Derek James, for those listening that don't know who he is, 2017 Trainer of the Year, trains the likes of Jermell Charlo and Errol Spence, two very, very aggressive fighters. So stylistically, that could be very good for AJ. But I thought AJ looked quite good against Usyk. Or maybe I'm missing something. I thought AJ looked good against Usyk. I think maybe there's something going on behind the scenes here. I thought another few camps of Robert Garcia would have been good, but ultimately he leaves Robert and it looks like he's going to go with Derek. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I've known Robert Garcia a while. He's a great trainer. He's a very calm man. Maybe they just didn't get on perfectly behind the scenes. I agree with you. That was an improved Anthony Joshua against Alexander Usyk last year. I was out there live. I saw it live. Mm. I was around AJ during the fight week and the build-ups to it all. He's very frustrated with himself because he doesn't have that little bit of boxing IQ at the top level, of technical ability. I don't care what anyone says, I had it 5-4 or 5-all after 10 rounds, and it was nicked by Usyk in the last couple of rounds by clever boxing skills and a great night of boxing for AJ. I mean, I think he could be proud of himself. That's why Spencer Oliver and I said to him at the press conference, be proud of that performance.
Yeah.
Even though he threw the belts and he threw his toys out in the private little way and he had tears and emotion. I remember there were about 8 members of his family standing right behind me and I was saying to them, that is an improved Anthony that we saw there. But maybe Robert wasn't perfectly fitted for him. I mean, Robert's been very magnanimous, actually. I've seen in interviews that he thinks Derek James might be able to do good things with him. Yeah. Errol Spence and the Charlo twins have all come out and said, obviously they're all world champions, come out and said, Derek will be great for him mentally. He's going to go over to Dallas, Texas, we understand, to train with him over there, away from prying eyes. He hasn't got his mental, psychological scaffolding of being at Loughborough or Sheffield, where he was with Robert McCracken for all those years. I think it'll do him good. I think the shackles are off him. Five more fights in his career. I think he's done. But let's have these two good fights now, Dillian White and whoever it is, Jermaine Franklin, Dempsey McKean, whoever it is. So Franklin will give him issues. Franklin has got desire, by the way. We saw that against Dillian White. When that big fella starts pounding people, I'm talking about AJ, he hits very, very hard. And I want to see him in a big fight early next year and late this year. Dillian against, after Dillian White, if he beats Dillian, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, or Joe Joyce. And I want to see him fight all three of them, if possible, because I think those are the five fights that end his career.
Yeah, and fantastic. Couldn't have summed it up any better than that. All right, next up, we're going to switch gears and chat some UFC. Francis Ngannou, released from his contract, has set up a debut for John Jones at heavyweight. But how will the great man get on?
Closes the show.
Oh my goodness gracious!
Francis Ngannou has knocked out Cain Velasquez.
Wow. Not a lot of people burning up Nick Maynard's phone to try to get a matchup with Ngannou.
Down goes the ring. Francis Ngannou has arrived.
Whoa! That's what we were talking about, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to release him from his contract. We're going to give up our right to match. And he can go wherever he wants and do whatever he wants.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth A. Davis. All right, time to talk some UFC. A lot's happened in the last couple of weeks. The big news, though, in the last 48 hours is that Francis Ngannou has been released. He's been let go by the UFC out of his contract. Where he'll end up, we'll discuss next. And John Jones will return to fight Ciryl Gane for the heavyweight title in March. Massive, massive news. Let's first hear from Dana White, who's confirmed why the UFC have let Francis Ngannou leave.
We've been working on a new agreement with Francis for like 2 years now. And we had gotten to a point where he was going to fight John Jones, and many who believe, including me, that he's the best of all time, for the heavyweight championship. And John Jones has been willing and ready and able to fight anybody. He didn't care who it was. Could have been anybody in the heavyweight division. He was ready to go. And Francis, we offered Francis a deal that would have made him the highest paid heavyweight in the history of the company. More than Lesnar, more than anybody. And he turned the deal down. So, I don't know. We get to this point where I've told you guys this before. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. I think Francis is in a place right now where he doesn't want to take a lot of risk. Feels like he's in a good position where he could fight lesser opponents and make more money. So we're gonna let him do that. We're gonna release him from his contract. We're gonna give up our right to match, and he can go wherever he wants and do whatever he wants. That's where we're at.
Dana White, they're talking about Francis Ngannou. He mentioned stuff as well in that interview that they've offered him as much as they've could. They would have made him the highest paid heavyweight in the history of the company, more than Brock Lesnar. That wasn't enough for Francis Ngannou, who's decided, enough's enough with the company. Whether or not he will go to the PFL, there's rumors about him fighting the likes of Derek Chisora in boxing. I want to focus, if we can, though, first, Gareth, on the fact that Francis Ngannou, the UFC heavyweight champion, has decided to walk away from the number one MMA organization in the world. How damaging is that for the UFC?
Well, it's always been an uneasy relationship, hasn't it? I mean, he's got all the credentials for an amazing narrative and incredible stories. He's so popular with the fans. Mm. I'm a little bit mystified by all this. And listen, it's no secret that he hasn't got on, or his negotiators, his team haven't got on that well with Dana White, and they haven't got the right deals for him along the line. I wonder, Eddie, whether he's being tempted away now by things like the PFL doing, Professional Fighters League doing 50-50 pay-per-view events for their names. I could easily see him going there this year, because you could match him against so many heavyweights out there and people will watch it, because Francis is box office. I'm very surprised. I think it's a nosedive for the UFC. They should have done everything they could do to keep Francis Ngannou, especially as John Jones is stepping up to heavyweight. This incredible guy who I believe John Jones belongs on the Mount Rushmore of MMA, for all his failings as well, which we can delve into over 2 hours. We could take over that for his failed drug tests and his misdemeanor charges and his going AWOL and all these kind of things. It's a mystery to me, and I think it's a massive loss and a massive travesty. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him end up in the PFL.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about Dana White in the UFC today. I did a video on my YouTube channel talking about John Jones and his return. And I was thinking about I was looking down the roster of stars they had 5 years ago. And it was Ronda Rousey. It was John Jones. It was Conor McGregor coming into his peak. It was Brock Lesnar. It was Nate Diaz were there. Both Diaz brothers were there, in fact. And it felt like it was pay-per-view sort of needle movers all over the place. Like people that were touching a million pay-per-view buys. I look at the roster now and I think Hamzat could eventually do something special. Izzy, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, Kamaru Usman got beat by Leon Edwards. They're struggling to kind of unearth or birth that new star. And that's something they've never had a problem with doing over the last few years, because it felt like there was just a conveyor belt of stars. And I wonder if that's the reason why they're so desperate to get John Jones back. They've tied him down to an 8-fight contract. He's all of a sudden the best fighter that Dana White's ever seen. They're struggling, aren't they, a little bit, the UFC?
Look, Eddie, you said earlier I've been in boxing 2 decades. It's 32 years this year, actually.
Oh,
and
wow.
In MMA is 2 decades. I go back to, 2004, 2005. And I worked on ESPN years ago as the thing grew from the internet sport that it was onto mainstream television. Mm. Obviously, the internet has powered and empowered the UFC. 6 years ago, I mean, I worked on TV broadcasts when John Jones, as a light heavyweight, remember, I covered this kid's career. He was in my car one day for 3 hours in a traffic jam with Malki Kawa, his manager, Thiago Alves and Wanderlei Silva stuck in the back, all crammed together in the back of my car.
Was that when there was an exhibition at arena was it in London?
The Olympia.
Olympia, yes.
And we had a traffic jam and I was driving them all to the O2 Arena for the fight. We had to park the car and get on a tube and we were crammed in with loads of fans. We couldn't get over, couldn't get through the tunnel, yeah? So we got on a tube. I parked a Canary, I've got on a tube. I'm not joking, there were 1,000 fans in literally one carriage all trying to squeeze up against these guys. I was there when he beat Shogun Hua, Rampage Jackson, Lyoto Machida, Rashad Evans, Vitor Belfort, 6 years ago to pin what you were just saying as well. I wrote a massive piece for Fighters Only magazine saying, look, if John Jones turned heavyweight now, there's $10 million pay-per-view events. Frank Mir, Josh Barnett, Junior Dos Santos, Andrei Arlovsky, Cain Velasquez, Fabricio Werdum. There was also Mark Hunt, Travis Brown, and Ben Rothwell.
Alistair Overeem.
And Alistair Overeem. Imagine that's about 13 names, yeah? Imagine him fighting on an 8-fight deal, 8 of those guys.
God.
Exactly. God. Now, you put out a very interesting tweet. I don't often respond to tweets. I wrote nonsense. Let's discuss it on Tuesday.
Let's do this.
Right, to finish the show.
Yeah.
I believe he is outside, in my time, covering guys live. As I say, he belongs on the Mount Rushmore of MMA. Anderson Silva, the great George St. Pierre, John Jones, and Randy Couture are the four that I've watched live. I can throw BJ Penn. And
I thought you might throw Mighty Mouse in there, but okay, BJ is.
But no, it's those guys.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly writing that column 6 years ago thinking, oh my God, almost every one of those heavyweights I mentioned would probably have done with John Jones a million pay-per-view buys, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't throw Brock Lesnar in there either, by the way, yeah? John Jones versus Brock Lesnar. All these kind of fights. John is a very special athlete. You said 37 months away, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Can he really put on 40, 45 pounds and do what it takes at heavyweight? I think he can, because the guys now are Cyril Gane, Stipe Miocic, Sergei Pavlovich, Curtis Blaydes, Tai Tuivasa, Tom Aspinall, Derek Lewis, Alexander Volkov. Now listen, 3 out of 8 of those might beat John just on size, but they are not the names that were there 6 years ago.
Of course not. No.
You know?
They're not. And I
they're
agree.
Not the skill sets that were there 6 years ago either.
Cyril Gane, I disagree with. I think he's very, very skilled. I know he didn't look great against Francis Ngannou, but I think he had something. And as you say. I mean, one thing John had in favor of him against any other light heavyweight up until maybe for Gustafsson, was he was bigger than them all.
Yeah.
He was just bigger, like just so much bigger than all of them. His reach, his length, his height. Against Cyril Garn, he's the same size. And he's been out for 3 years. And look, let's be honest, Gareth, you know him personally. I love John. John's not the type of person to live like a nun for 3 years. John's been abusing his body, and he admitted that in many interviews that he used to get stone cold drunk, do cocaine, and still kick ass. And congratulations. Mm. You can do that in your 20s.
Yeah.
It will catch up to you in your 30s. And John Jones's last couple of fights for me, I think we saw it slowly starting to catch up with him. Can you be out of the octagon, as good as he is, can you be out of the octagon for 3 years and still come back and kick butt? I hope he can, because I love him just like, I think it's the one person that we both love equally. Like almost a tug of war of love against him, because I love him as well.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he can do it after 3 years out. I really don't. I want him to prove me wrong.
Well, after responding to you on the Twitter sphere on Saturday morning, I looked back as well, and like you rightly say, Anthony Smith, Thiago Santos, Dominic Reyes, all 5-round fights, didn't look amazing in them.
No.
Obviously, Alex Gustafsson before that, and Alex isn't what he was when they fought in Montreal in 2013. I think it was Montreal, Toronto, wherever it was in Canada. I was there. I remember working for BT Sports on that one, but it was one of the greatest fights I've ever seen live, by the way. That first fight between him and Gustafsson.
Incredible.
Unbelievable. Oh, spinning back elbow to change the fight in the fourth round. And both men literally out on their feet for the last 5 minutes.
Wow.
You know, Gustafsson showing the
and
heart.
And how many years ago
fight.
Was that?
That was 10 years ago.
See?
10 years ago.
He was the crossover star that the UFC begged to have before Conor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, literally
yeah.
had everything. Good looking, charisma. I remember he got the Nike sponsorship when Nike weren't really invested in the sport.
Yeah.
And then it just went down. Like he should be a preacher, 100 million
He's a
right
son
now.
Of a preacher man as well, isn't he?
Yeah. Look at his brothers, how talented they were in the NFL.
Yeah.
John Jones should have $100 million in the bank right now.
Yeah, absolutely right. He should be one of the greatest stars we've ever seen in fight sports. Yeah. I didn't finish my sentence earlier.
Sorry.
No, it's down to me. I'm very verbose tonight. I'm not giving you a look in. Apart from people like Floyd Mayweather, he's the greatest I've seen live in this era, with the likes of Anderson Silva. And I just think, you know, I've got faith in John. I don't know whether I'm having a heart over head moment here, and maybe that, you know, you're just thinking through it kind of coldly, you know, with a cold stone cold hand, you know, but maybe you're right. The proof will be in the pudding when he steps in there against Garn. And if he beats Garn, I don't think there's Miocic. I'd like to see that. Miocic's got good hands.
Mm.
What do we need to see from Jones? Has he got speed with the same speed and dexterity with 45 more pounds on him?
Wow.
He isn't an elusive kind of fighter either. And if one punch changed it in heavyweight boxing, a jab can change it in MMA in heavyweights with those 4-ounce gloves. So
John gets hit.
He gets hit.
John gets hit.
You're right. So he doesn't beat all 10 of those now that we mentioned. He might get beaten by 3 out of 8 of them. But he's done it 5 years too late for me. That I agree with you. It's 5 years too late.
We've missed out on so many. Look, we even missed out on the Izzy fight at light heavyweight.
Yeah.
That could have happened. And that would have been 1 million pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, yeah.
He's missed out on so long. And I agree. It's 5 years too late. That jump to heavyweight should have been ages ago.
Yeah.
I mean, if Daniel Cormier could come down and go up and do what he did. Like, Daniel Cormier is a double champ over John. Like, John Jones should have been double champ years ago. Oh, that's a shame. It really is.
Yeah,
but look,
I don't want
to shed no tears over the great man. At least he's back. And we've also got confirmation as well, very quickly, that Leon Edwards will take on Kamaru Usman, London, which I think is fantastic. March 18th. That's a big one. Put that one in your diaries. A week before my birthday, if you fancy getting me a couple of tickets, Gareth, I'd really appreciate it. All right, you've been listening to Fight Night Extra here on TalkSport 2. Great show today, I must say so myself. That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.